One, two, three, four. Welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. My name is Chris, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Tom.
Hello.
And we just finished watching the night... Oh, and Cole's on the couch burping.
Not bad.
Not bad. And we just finished watching the 1974 Peter Davis documentary, Hearts and Minds.
About the Vietnam War.
Yeah. Very harsh, one-sided opinion where I think they did a hatchet job on the US government, underestimating their efforts and the good things that they did in that war. I can't maintain this facade, that's just gross.
Don't even try.
Don't even try. Yeah, it's documentary about the American involvement in the Vietnam War, taking a very hard anti-war stance, kind of showing and highlighting the futility and the pointlessness of that military engagement.
Like the retardation?
Yeah.
Shown by heaps of people in power?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or just the short-sightedness and the simple nature of people involved, I guess.
It's pretty... It's very sad.
Yeah.
It's a really sad thing to watch.
It was an interesting one because it's not an easy film to watch because... I think, especially for us, because it so clearly... The conflict in Vietnam is so, opposite of, our moral stances, I guess. And seeing a film that is just... It's a really interestingly structured one, where the first half of the film is just pretty much explaining why America is there, or why they believe it's right for them to be there, and then it slowly kind of twists to the other side of... You shouldn't have been here. This was kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Mm. But it was just the kind of bombardment of the gung-ho attitude and the kind of lack of understanding just became a really rough after a little while.
Yeah, I struggled. The first half I struggled just trying to understand how the Vietnam War came to be.
Yeah,
I found myself having to kind of jump on Google and try and give myself a bit of a history lesson.
Mm.
Because the film does a really good job of explaining that, yes, there's a communist situation there and that needs to be quelled because communism is bad, according to the West, I guess, the Western government.
Post-World War II America, communism is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's bad, it's bad in this country, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, Australia...
Australia was part of Vietnam.
The only time our country's ever done involuntary conscription for armed forces.
Yeah.
With some of our friends' parents fought in Vietnam, yeah.
Yeah, my uncle was conscripted, but...
Oh.
Because his dad had died in World War II, he was actually found to be exempt afterwards, so it was okay.
Oh, that's an interesting loophole.
Yeah, I think it was... Yeah, he got around it anyway.
Yeah.
No one wants to go there.
No,
and fight that war.
Yeah.
Which uncle?
Roddy.
Ask Dad. Die in the
war? Huh? Dad oh, no, sorry. He was too young. He was like a year too young. I think Dad was the one that might have to go because he was the eldest son in a family where their father had died at an early age due to World War II. And it was a widow and all that sort of stuff.
So he
was effectively acting as the father figure in that family. So they were like, we're not going to fuck that shit up.
Yeah.
This is what I spoke about this shit fucking ages ago with my dad. So
yeah,
it's all kind of fuzzy.
I was having the kind of thought while watching this film because my dad moved to Canada when he was 19, which was kind of, in the early 60s. Late, around that time, I guess. and then I'm just like, were you dodging the draft? Like, it's never kind of come up.
But wouldn't you?
Fucking oath!
I would totally dodge the shit out of that.
Yeah, oh, well, I have the wonderful thing of I have just so many health issues that it wouldn't matter. I'm fine. Yeah. I'd just sit back easy and be like, yeah, I'm not a draft dodger, but I kind of am. Like, yeah.
You're not fit to hold a gun.
No.
For any country.
Good God, no. I probably shouldn't even be allowed to drive a car, but...
Well, that's good. That's good for you in a way.
Yeah.
Because, you know... No one can... No system can fuck you, even though you could make your own decision, it would be still the same thing.
Yeah. But no, the second conscription came in, I would fucking bail. I would have just have left. So it's... I guess, you know, us having these kind of opinions and views on war and conflict, for the first half of this film, it makes it a kind of very tough and... Dare I say, confusing what? Or confounding, I think, is a good word for it.
Oh, deeply, yeah.
Yeah. Where you're just sitting there and you're seeing all of these experts and officials being so steadfast in their belief of what they did there and what they achieved. And then it's, as the film progresses, you slowly see that unravel.
I'm still confused. I get that it's, you know, communism is bad for governments... of certain kinds and stuff, and therefore you don't want to have communists around. But then I still don't get like why Vietnam in particular is like why the Chinese and the Russia was like communism's good. We need to support the North, and then Australia and America and all that jazz are supporting the South. But why spend like so much money?
$2 billion a year
just in the US, yeah. And then you know throw all these lives away for a nation that does need help, but at the same time, it's very ethereal.
I can't help but go back to the one of the opening statements. I want to say it's either McCarthy or Johnson, like talking about it, and how if their ties to Vietnam, Indochina are cut off.
Is it like a tungsten?
Yeah, they're going to lose their tungsten. Sweet, sweet tungsten.
So it's some economic benefit.
Yeah, a tungsten and tin. Which they so desperately need to make the bombs in which to bomb the country so they can get the tungsten and tin.
Yeah, okay.
No, I don't know. It's...
But even that doesn't make sense to me. So yeah. Really, like, I've always... Vietnam War has always been like that for me. I look at it and go, like, yes, if there's a mistake there, but...
Why they did it. Yeah.
That's right. I never really knew why they started.
I think that's just us, you know, not... having solid history knowledge of things, like we were saying about 10 minutes into this movie, like, God damn it, where's Eric or Mike? Like, we needed them.
Yeah, we're not really fit.
So, my idea for this from this point, like, we should probably just bypass that stuff and focus on the film itself, which is what we really should be doing.
Yeah, no, but if anyone has an explanation.
Yeah,
because I genuinely want to know the fuck's going on, right?
Yeah.
And I think this film does a wonderful job at explaining the problems on a human level,
mm-hmm.
but I still don't think I have a full grasp on the political and economic processes that were involved.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind so much because ultimately the film's kind of playing to it, what I would consider the strengths of a political war movie, anti-war sort of stuff. You want to play to the human level.
Yeah.
You know, it's deeply unsettling, and I watched this, I had a bit of cry, a bit of tear, multiple times, especially in the back end.
Yeah, this is, I think, out of all of the films we've watched, like, including things like Salo and things, like, this is the most I've had to turn away from the screen.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, there was stuff I just did not want to start my Saturday morning with watching.
So yeah, we started watching this early Saturday morning because, you know, we thought that was, you know, we'll get some work done today.
Yeah.
We've
seen a lot of people get murdered today. But yeah, it's... I think, in terms of a documentary film, I think it's incredibly strong.
Mm.
And I think it kind of... Being so sociopolitically driven, I think it is a landmark film. Kind of somewhat going back to, like, Idi Amin, when we watched that the other couple of weeks ago, it's kind of taking those ideas of presenting a situation, a socio-political situation, and presenting it in a way that makes the audience kind of view the situation and be like, that's fucked up. Like, informing an opinion based on a situation. But I think, whereas Idi Amin Dada kind of just let that guy... He didn't have to skew the film and the perspective to elicit a response from the audience. Like, Idi Amin did that himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas what Peter Davis has done with Hearts and Minds, I feel... It's very clearly... He has constructed a narrative based on the footage he has created, and I guess, like, to liken it to something modern day, it's a little bit Michael Moore-esque. Like, it's inspiring that kind of politically charged documentaries, I think, that were to come, kind of start coming out in the kind of early 80s, like, you know, maybe 5 years after this.
Do you mean, I tend to agree on the fact that, I mean, he seems to be wanting to, on multiple points, go... Here's a man from the military side having an interview. He's going to say some stuff. And then we're going to cut to some other images which show how stupid his comments
were. It's contradictory, right? The images, yeah. Like
that was happening a lot.
Yeah.
And so is that, in a sense, what you're talking about with the Michael Moore stuff?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, he's using the images in the interview and all the footage he's collected over the years of making this to construct a very specific narrative from a very succinct socio-political point of view.
Because policymakers make a policy, and then the consequence of that is...
Yeah.
These policymakers are fucking, like, retarded.
Yeah, and he's very much pushing forward his point of view on the opinion, on the situation, and using the irony and the kind of ridiculous stupidity of some of the, you know, policymakers contrast with their blind eye to what is actually happening.
It's almost like an epic tragedy.
Oh, fucking...
You know, it, like, I mean, it literally is, really.
Yeah.
But it's got, you say, the irony and all that sort of stuff, but yeah. It just becomes so fucking tragic.
I think it's very clever in its construction that way, because it starts off very simply kind of explaining, this is the situation in Vietnam, this is why we're here, and it's all the people rah, 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 waving the flags. And a lot of the talking head interviews you get of veterans, like, who've just come back from the war, they are seeming to be talking from a very positive atmosphere. Sorry, a positive perspective about what was happening over there, to some degree. And then, in the back third of the film...
There's the zoom out.
You slowly pull out on all the same talking heads, and you realise, oh, these guys are, like, missing arms, they're paralysed, they're in... And then it's the truth comes out about how they actually feel. It's... The first half is basically what they did there, and the second half is how they feel and how it affected, which is a really interesting... It's, I suppose, pretty much like the Hearts and Minds, like, pretty much taken from the title. Like.
That's a good call, man. So it's like they go in with their hearts and they come out as a critical thinker.
But just being like, that was fucked. I'm in a wheelchair now. Like, I'm... The guy who's the pilot who talked about, it opens with him saying he's very proud of his flying. Like, he's very proud of being able to do that and, like, what he's done military-wise.
Initially, I felt really uncomfortable with this guy.
Yeah, and then at the back there, he starts crying, talking about the type of bombs he dropped. And, like, he has the thought of, like, if he'd been dropping napalm, and he just starts crying, thinking about how that would have affected the civilians and the people that, yeah... Yeah. It's so powerful.
It's fucking intense.
Yeah. But just to, like, point out on the irony, I think that's something that Davis very cleverly doesn't lay on too thick at the beginning. He lets you kind of get situated and kind of drip feeds enough of his perspective and his point of view in that first third that you understand where the film is going and where he's coming from, that when he starts laying the irony on, you are on board for it. I think that's where the Civil War reenactment scene... the Revolutionary War reenactment scene is just sublime. Like, pointing out the ignorance and the irony of...
Of these so-called patriots.
Yeah, and, like, the interview of the guy saying, like, you know, it's so great that a country can fight against the oppressors that have, like... It's pretty much talking He's talking about America versus the British, but it's exactly the same situation as against the French. And then it's immediately intercut to another guy who's just like, don't you fucking talk to me about Asian fucking military politics, those savages. And you're just like, you ignorant fool.
That's what they have. You can only call it just a fucking tragic mess.
Yeah.
And the same thing again, they do a similar situation with taking a look at football. The film constantly comes back to American football and the rituals and the system involved with that is, I guess, making a comparison between the mindset that a soldier may go into the Vietnam War with, or even someone with authority in the military, and then comparing that to the situation with a side versus a side with coaches and all that sort of thing in a football game. I thought that was a very clever way to kind of allow what can be a very complex problem to understand, the Vietnam War, and try and bring it back to a microcosm that is, you know, just a random town in America.
I think it
very clever.
It works really well as well to kind of hammer home the idea that conflict and competition is a part of the American zeitgeist. It's like apple pie. Like it seems to be the way that this one was presenting it, at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy competition and conflict and aggression is what built this country, boys. So, and it's that it's really brutal to think about, and it's the idea of there's that scene where the coach is revving up his team in the locker room. And he starts just hitting the players and just being like, we gotta kill him, we gotta do this, there's no way, there's no compromise. And you're like, this is wonderfully contrasted to...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because at no point do they really show... I think it's very clever that he never shows the military leaders in Vietnam. The only people he interviews on the ground in Vietnam are either Vietnamese people who have been affected or... just grunt soldiers. It's not until the very end, once America is withdrawn and it's the handing over to the South Vietnamese, that you see any person of prominent rank actually on the ground talking. And it is, I think, that he's using that very cleverly, the football scene, to be like, this is what has been hammered into these boys since they were in high school.
Yeah.
And here they are put in this similar kind of situation, but fucking reality. Like, you know, powerful filmmaking.
Yes, precisely. I don't know what else to, like, where to go with this, with talking about this film. Like, it's fucking a really good movie.
Yeah,
it's really, really, really good documentary. I think it might be the best the best documentary I've seen on the Vietnam War.
Mm.
I've seen like a small handful and I always get confused and shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I still don't really know how to, like, to what degree do we need to unpack this?
Yeah, it's one where, like, you know, obviously we are not that knowledgeable on history of the Vietnam War, so we don't want to try and get into that. But,
We need to kind of assist. There's got to be, obviously, documentaries are a form of filmmaking, and I find that whenever we do a documentary, there's this a tendency to start talking about stuff that's shown in the documentary that's not typically filmic techniques.
Yeah.
Not because it's so different to just a fictional tale.
Yeah, dissecting a narrative. Yeah.
So.
Well,
how do you...
What was it? There was a film we were debating the other... it was Tokyo Olympics. We kind of didn't know how to approach that, so we ended up getting into the conversation of what makes a documentary and why is this a good example of that. So I suppose we could try and approach it from those perspectives. But I think that could be a little bit futile with this, because it's so... Because unlike Tokyo Olympics, which, yes, it did have a very distinct vision and things, but it was so drawn out and protracted and seemed unusual and something different, whereas this is very clearly a filmmaker with a point of view and a story to tell, and he's doing it with, you know, in this non-fictional narrative way. Mm-hmm. And it's so very clearly a documentary in its form and its structure and everything about it.
You almost need to have a historical knowledge of documentaries, though.
It's an interesting one because it's less informative and it's not an informative documentary. It's a mood piece documentary, if I guess could say that. It's one that pretty much is. It doesn't tell you a lot about the situation and like. It's not a history of Vietnam. It's just a presentation of what happened. Without really informing you about it. It's just showing you in a very, you know, framing the war in a very negative light about, like, this is why this was bad. It's a tough one to talk about in the sense of it is just, it's a very simple film about a very complex issue, I guess.
I don't think that it's simple. It's, fucking complex issue, but it's
I wasn't using simple as like a pejorative term. I mean, like, it's an amazing film, but I mean, it's simple in the way of like
let's just focus on the front line effectively.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about straight up. It's a 1974 film. Mm-hmm. Made when was the war finished?
The war ended on April 30th, 1975.
So this film was made during the war.
Yep.
And released prior to the end of the war.
Yes.
Okay. That's actually kind of great because it has a tremendous amount of retrospective beauty to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it really feels like someone had crafted this after the fact.
Yeah.
People have had time to process. That they haven't been inside the problem, they've been outside after a time of reflection, and so that's amazing to me that the film is
in the heat of it all.
It's in the middle of the whole process, and at the same time is so clear on its values.
Yeah, like. Which I think it's kind of interesting as well. There's that heartbreaking interview scenes with the father and mother who'd lost, whose son was a helicopter pilot who had died, and they were so sure of the fact that he died for his country was good, and like they were so proud of him, and it's heartbreaking. And he's espouting all of this praise for Richard Nixon and him as a policymaker and things, and then it just very subtly a subtitle comes up. Filmed early in 1973, which I kind of. Don't. It's both really funny and clever filmmaking, but I kind of didn't like that. Sorry, just to like kind of linger on that moment for a second.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I feel that those people are so earnest that I feel adding that kind of subtitle just undercuts him so.
I think he was making fun of
me. Yeah, it's so rude.
I don't think so. I don't think that he was doing that. I was thinking that he was like.
So much later than.
It's a bit touchy.
It was released a year later.
It's a bit touchy.
But obviously, before an election or something.
Oh, no, it's right before all the Watergate stuff.
It's right before, like, that complete disaster.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's probably fair to put that up there then, because the person may have changed their mind afterwards.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh no, this person never changed their mind.
Yeah, I know, but still, after Watergate and after the whole country's perspective on that person has changed, you don't want to put somebody like that up on the screen so the whole country can make fun of them. You put up there that this was filmed before early 73.
Yeah,
so that
okay.
Everyone watched.
Okay, yeah, I can see that from that.
Because that film
context,
would have been.
Yes.
You can see why you would think this about the person.
That film would have been released in 74, and everyone would have been like, that guy's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
And they would have potentially. That may have invalidated all of his points if they're ever. Whatever you're going to get out of his. You know, whatever he was saying.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Yeah. So.
Where were we?
Yeah. It coming out, the time frame in which it came out and things. So, I mean, obviously this film had a huge divisive impact when it first came out. I feel this is, I mean, it certainly holds up, because obviously the further away we've gotten from Vietnam, most people agree that it was probably not the greatest of situations and wars, and America shouldn't have really gotten involved.
Oh, I've never met a person that was I've like, never met a person
damn
that said,
straight we did that
Vietnam
was, great.
Was good.
Exactly.
Vietnam War was a good thing to do.
So the film, in terms of longevity and it holding up as a documentary, it's like an A+. Like, it still is very pertinent today.
I guess since the war was 20-year-old war, it's like, you know, at year 19, everyone, like, these guys, so many people would have made their minds up already, going like, what a fucking mistake.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, there were people probably, you know, conscripted who weren't even born when it started.
Oh, that's disgusting. That's such a terrible...
Yeah.
That's so terrible.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I guess, like, the kind of continuing on this note of its staying power and things as a documentary, we could, I mean, briefly talk about why it's in, like, it's very clearly deserves to be in Criterion, and it's understandable why they've put it in the collection and why they've recently, like, done a 4K remaster and everything on it, and they're kind of keeping it alive. It's an important documentary, I think. Especially, like, you know, what we were just saying, like, the time in which it came out, it's incredible. It's, yeah.
Is it... I got the sense that because it's putting in that the football stuff, that it's really trying to, at the time, obviously a large portion of America and the world was just like, Vietnam's fucking stupid, and beyond that, war is stupid.
Yeah.
I get the sense that because there's this football stuff going on in it, that the film's really trying to impress that same idea that not only is Vietnam stupid, but just fucking killing people
conflict
in general,
and, yeah.
Is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Are they trying... I get the sense that they're trying to push that way more into the mainstream at that time.
I can see that, yeah.
I guess, like, what I'm saying is, if there's anything good to come out of the Vietnam War, it's that a whole bunch of people... all of a sudden decided that war itself is shit.
Yeah.
Not everybody thinks that, but I definitely get a sense that...
The world's perspective, or, you know, the Western world's perspective changed on war.
Yeah, that's I think that's a transition that's been occurring for like quite a few decades, but...
But at the same...
I mean, like, if anything, it would have been World War II would have really...
But I find it so interesting that, like we were saying, the scene in which the prisoner of war, who we keep coming back to periodically throughout the film, the guy who was a POW for 7 fucking years, comes home and he's like, yep, I'll go back in a heartbeat. He's still so fucking gung-ho about it because it's been indoctrinated into him through his family, through his country, through, you know, education, all of that.
Is that the fellow that couldn't flee to Canada in the end?
No. This is the guy who they were having to pray for. Coco was his name.
Yeah,
He's doing a Q&A with and a talk at a primary school and or an elementary school. And he keeps, like, his opening statement was, when the day comes when you kids go to war, which is a baffling idea that the people that went to Vietnam and were around in that time when the war first started and, you know, was in the heat of conflict and everything, they were from a generation where their parents went to war, their grandparents went to war. There was a major war for every generation. So war had just become a thing that is always around and is always happening.
Mm.
And it's fucking scary.
It's amazing.
I think the people and, like, this film as well using it is trying to put forth the perspective of, like, that shouldn't be a thing. Like, especially for the sake of stupid reasons like Vietnam was.
Yeah, it's, that character, a person, he may be one of the most unsettling aspects of the film for me. Because he went through the whole thing. He went through to the war, and he
was a prisoner of war.
He was a prisoner
for
and
7 years.
Yeah, and still he came back. Go on, Cole.
No, go on.
Still he came back and was like, oh, I'll do it all again.
I think that might, like, his positive attitude...
Beyond that, he was saying, I won't only just do it again, I will now talk to schools and become a propaganda machine.
I think because if he doesn't, it makes what he went through futile. It's admitting to the fact of it was all for nothing, and it was... Like, if you admit that, like, the war is wrong, like, you're like, well, why the fuck was I in a tiger cage for 7 years? Like, it's a crumbling.
If you admit that the war is wrong, then you end the war.
So,
that's good. Cole?
It's also probably very, very likely that 7 years grew a very deep hatred.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So...
He's talking to school kids, calling them dinks and gooks. Casual racism in this film is baffling.
I think it's probably... I'll probably give that guy a free pass on hating...
He's not hate... He never really explicitly hates the Vietnamese people. He is just super positive the American forces. He never comes across with a hatred for the other side. It's the positive attitude that makes him so unstable.
I actually think that he's completely normalized.
Yeah.
His hatred.
Yeah, that it's... But he never points is like, we gotta go over there and stop, like, he, you know, crush the enemy and destroy it. Like, he's not that type of rhetoric guy.
7 years in a POW camp, you're gonna develop some pretty fucked up mental system to deal with that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And believing that you're right and they're wrong is gonna be a major problem.
Well, that's what I mean, and by coming to an understanding that that might not be the case, it just is a fundamental breakdown of his psyche and his belief system, so...
You know, what more could you want out of a documentary, really?
Yeah.
It's, fucking challenging.
Yeah, it's not an easy watch, especially in the back... third,
and I already agree with the filmmaker. I went in agreeing with everything.
From the point of the Tet Offensive onwards, things get real tough to watch. Real tough.
Yeah.
This is I would say this is a film that, like, should be shown in schools and things. But unfortunately, there's some moments of, like, you know, very extreme, like, horrible death and destruction and things, and as well, we never touched on, like, the prostitution, like, the prostitute scenes, which are just fucking, like, so horrendous. Like, we'll move on from them, because what can you say? those scenes speak for themselves.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, the filmmaker's just trying to paint a picture there of the front line again.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
I think we don't need to. I don't think we need to cover stuff like that. You can look at all of the people on the front line, all of the American soldiers, and it just was tragic.
Hmm.
Everything comes back to tragedy.
Yeah,
you have the American soldiers on the front line. Seemingly, they don't think for themselves. You always get the sense that they're kind of just following some kind of order. And they believe in a system so much that they've never questioned it. That's fucking tragic. Then you have policy makers and decision makers starting something they can never finish. And for that reason, they just have to keep going.
Yeah.
That's fucking tragic. So...
And then also the tragedy of, you know, what's befallen the Vietnamese
then you just got to watch, like, literally just all the Vietnamese civilians just being like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and then you, like, so obviously that's tragic, so yeah. it's brutal, but, you know, it's a great documentary, man. Yeah. Like, deeply moving.
Definitely worth seeking out if you have not seen it. Well, I guess on that note, we'll move on to trivia. Mm. So the film won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature at the 1975 Academy Awards. I was also nominated for the Golden Globe that same year, but did not win that. The film premiered at the 1974 Cannes Film Festival. Commercial distribution was delayed in the United States due to legal issues, including a temporary restraining order obtained by one of the interviewees.
Who is that?
The former National Security Advisor, Walt Rostow.
Is he the guy at the end?
No, he's the guy at the beginning. He was just like, you want me to ask that goddamn, answer that goddamn silly question? Like, that guy.
Okay.
He did not, he claimed through his attorney that the film was somewhat misleading and not representative, and that he thought he'd been given the opportunity to approve the result of the interview. Which is like, what? No? When is
that's
that?
That's not journalism.
That's not the... Yeah. So he, slapped the filmmakers and the studio with a restraining order, and they weren't allowed to exhibit the film. Columbia Pictures, who had bought the distribution rights in Cannes, refused to distribute the picture, which forced producers to purchase back the rights and release it by other means. The film was shown in Los Angeles for the 1 week it needed to be eligible for consideration for the 1974 Academy Awards. So, after Columbia Pictures refused to distribute the picture, the producers Bert Schneider and Henry Jaglom purchased back the rights and released the film in March 1975 through Warner Brothers. A planned December 1974 opening in Los Angeles was cancelled after the production company had been unable to pay the $1 million needed to buy the rights from Columbia. The film was ultimately shown in New York, eligible for screenings, as I mentioned. It finally screened, and they got sorted all their legal issues and got the rights back, and Warner Brothers kind of helped them out with releasing it, and then they eventually won the Academy Award.
Right, I mean, if it's a, they're trying to release it during the war, effectively.
You can kind of understand the reticence from...
So there'd be a lot of Columbia. Political backlash, potentially.
Yeah.
A lot of problems there.
During his acceptance speech during the ceremony of the 1975 Academy Awards, co-producer Bert Schneider said, "It's ironic that we're here at a time just before Vietnam and is about to be liberated," and then read a telegram containing greetings of friendship to all American people from Ambassador Dinh Ba Thi of the Provisional Revolutionary Government, so the Viet Cong, from the delegation of the Paris Peace Accords. The telegram thanked the anti-war movement for all they had done on behalf of peace. I'm thinking I might just we'll play that acceptance speech now. I've listened to it. It's pretty interesting.
So yeah, rad.
We'll play that now.
The winner is Hearts and Minds. Peter Davis and Bert Schneider.
Thank you so much. It's ironic, of course, to get a prize for a war movie while the suffering in Vietnam continues, but I feel very lucky that we have it, and even luckier in our colleagues in filming, Dick Pierce, Tom Cohen, and Brennan Jones, and in editing, Lindsay Klingman and Susan Martin, who deserve the award equally with Bert and me. Mostly, though, I have been blessed, and not just lucky, with the support and inspiration of my wife, Johanna, and with the patience of our sons, who I hope will grow up in a country and atmosphere somewhat different from the one we had to portray in Hearts and Minds, and who I hope will go to bed now. Thank you.
First of all, I would like to say a special thank you to my late brother, Stanley, whose support and love and encouragement allowed us to make this film and all of the films that BBS made. It is ironic that we are here at a time just before Vietnam is about to be liberated. I will now read a short wire that I have been asked to read by the Vietnamese people. It is sent by Ambassador Dinh Ba Thi, who is the chief of the Provisional Revolutionary Government's delegation to Paris, the Paris political talks. It says, "Please transmit to all our friends in America our recognition of all that they have done on behalf of peace and for the application of the Paris Accords on Vietnam. These actions serve the legitimate interest of the American people and the Vietnamese people. Greetings of friendship to all the American people." Thank you very much.
So is that that's the North Vietnam?
Yeah, that is the delegate at the Paris Peace Accords for the Viet Cong. So essentially, he read out a telegram from the person in charge of the arm, like, you know, the army that America is fighting at the Academy Awards.
If that doesn't fuck your conception of what a war and having sides on a war is, then
yeah,
I don't know what
especially will, like, since that guy is thanking Americans for the anti-war movement, just being like, we just want to be left alone.
Yeah, like thanks for bringing peace.
Yeah,
because regardless of what you think about communism, capitalism, whatever.
Yeah,
you got to question the idea that if people are thinking that they're going for peace,
yeah,
then how much of a cunt are you if you're trying to stop that?
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the coolest Oscar speeches I've seen.
That's, that's crazy.
So basically, later on in that ceremony, Frank Sinatra actually responded later in the program by reading a letter from Bob Hope, who was another presenter on the show, with the statement, "The Academy is saying, we are not responsible for any political references made on the program, and we are sorry that they had to take place this evening." So that's them just kind of towing party line and, yeah. Not...
We don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, not dealing with that.
We don't want to have an opinion.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that's fair enough, though.
Yeah.
You know, let the artists do their thing.
Pretty much. Yeah, so that wraps it up for all the trivia I've got. So we'll move on to the actual Criterion edition itself. So the film is still in print. It's now available as a dual format Blu-ray and DVD in a 3-disc box set, as well as being available on iTunes. But the physical release comes with the following special features: an audio commentary by director Peter Davis, a collection of over 2 hours of Davis's unused footage, including excerpts from interviews with presidential advisor George Ball, broadcast journalist David Brinkley, French journalist and historian Philippe de Villiers, political activist Tony Russo, additional excerpts with General William Westmoreland, who was the horrible man at the end of the documentary.
Oh, that was so sad.
Yep.
That was bad.
That was real bad. Additional audio excerpts from presidential advisor Walt Rostow, interview and scenes from a funeral and a military hospital in South Vietnam, as well as the usual booklet and essays Criterion usually do, except this time it comes with about 6 essays. Like, it's a fucking book.
Yeah,
like, it's a loaded book.
Would you get that?
No. I don't think
it's a really good documentary, though.
As much as I loved the film, it's not one I feel I will rush to go back and watch. I don't think
it's more of a collector's item as opposed to a let's go back and revisit this film.
Exactly. If, you know, I was ever teaching film or anything like that and was just like, here's a good example of documentary, like early documentary filmmaking, I would show that film.
Mm.
But it's like, it's not a fun watch. It's not like...
No, well, that's the thing. The vast majority... Like, think of a documentary that has been made just because you want to have a good laugh.
Well, that... Like, I can counter that with, like, there are some Criterion documentaries I own and go back. Like, Grey Gardens. I've seen that a ridiculous amount of times.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Next door to Grey Gardens.
Really?
Have you noticed that house?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, our next door is like super Grey Gardens-y.
There's raccoons eating like loaves of
bread. Oh, no. Like, you come home at, like, after a party or whatever, 2 in the morning, and there'll be like 48-year-old people digging like holes with shovels. and one will be digging a hole in the front yard. And then 3 will be drinking large glasses of red wine.
Okay.
And, you know, just talking.
Commenting on the whole digging.
And you're like, what? Are you burying something? What's going on here?
I don't want to know. Good God. But yeah, no, there are other Criterion documentaries. This is a very, very good film, but I don't think I need to go back and rewatch it anytime soon. Yeah. But I guess that'll wrap us up for this week's episode, looking at Peter Davis' documentary, Hearts and Minds. If you have any comments or queries or think we've missed anything, please send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at Criterion Quest or on Facebook at The Criterion Quest. We'll be back in a fortnight's time with another Wes Anderson film when we finally get to explore the Royal Tenenbaums.
What's that?
I don't know. We'll find out in a fortnight's time, I guess.
Cool.
But for this week's episode, I'm Chris.
I'm Tom. Next time.